Hello, my lords and labias. This is Brooke, the host of the Good Mom Podcast, where we talk about the joys and the wonders of parenthood. That's a joke. We do not talk about the joys of parenthood. We talk about the struggles behind parenthood. We talk about mental health, the postpartum vagina, sex after a baby, making your marriage work, maybe not making your marriage work, and all the stuff that you don't usually want to talk about because every time you mention it to somebody, you feel like a bad fucking parent. Believe me, you're not a bad parent. We are all in this together on this crazy ass parenthood ride. Buckle up, bitches. All right, everybody. So last episode, we talked about... What did we talk about? I don't even remember. Oh, psychos. We talked about how your wife or your husband or your spouse, whoever, is turning into a psycho after they've had a baby. So today on this episode, I have brought my lovely husband on to talk about how he is married to a psycho. And just kidding. Don't tell me. Don't tell people you're married to a psycho. To kind of talk about how... his experience was with me being pregnant our first time around. And then, you know, during pregnancy, once baby was here, you know, we're a little bit different because we had a NICU stay. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. And then we'll get into the postpartum life, the toddler life, and now pregnancy number two. So we'll probably start with talking about just like at the beginning with me being pregnant.
Okay.
So when you found out I was pregnant, how'd you feel?
I mean, okay, so the first time, you know, we had been trying for a while, so definitely a surprise. And because I remember, like, you went and took the pregnancy test and came back out, and I don't know. At the time, I didn't know how to feel, and it felt great because we had done it, you know, and yeah.
Do you feel like, okay, so this is something I've always kind of wondered. Mm-hmm. You hear this a lot with dads. Do you feel like throughout my pregnancy, even though, like, yeah, you're excited, moms during their pregnancy are like, this is my baby. Like, mm-hmm. I feel every kick, like all that stuff.
Yeah.
Do you feel like, even though it's fucked up to say, do you feel like you loved the baby during pregnancy? Or do you kind of feel like, you know, who the fuck is this little baby inside by my wife?
I mean, yeah, I think I did. It's just I didn't feel like a dad until, you know, I saw her.
Yeah.
And, you know, not to cut too far ahead, but I feel like that'll be the same time this time, too. I don't feel like I'll feel like a dad of a second child until, you know, I see him or her.
I poop it out.
Yeah. And I don't know. I think that's pretty normal from what I understand, at least from what other guys have said. So
yeah, you always hear the, like, a mom becomes a mom when she's pregnant, yeah, and a dad becomes a dad when the baby's born. So I've always wondered, yeah, that. Like, are you just like, you know, yeah, there's a fucking baby inside of you. Cool.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's definitely weird to think about. And I think I remember, you know, like, reading Winnie the Pooh,
mm-hmm,
while, you know, we were trying to go to sleep and stuff like that to Lilia. And, you know, that's
exciting.
That's exciting. And you know, and then whenever, you know, you finally give birth, you do feel like a dad.
Yeah.
If you're out there and you're just, like, confused about, like, what, you know, how the heck you're supposed to feel right now, it all comes together whenever you see the baby for the first time. And, you know, you don't need to be worried about it. I know a lot of people say that, but that's definitely the truth.
Unless you're a psychopath and you don't feel nothing.
Maybe. I wouldn't know.
So, sure, sure.
Right.
So, whenever I was pregnant... So, okay, here's a good question. Whenever I was pregnant... This won't resonate for a lot of people, but... So, second pregnancy and first pregnancy. So, whenever I was pregnant the first time,
mm-hmm,
do you feel like you needed to support me a lot? Like, did you feel like I was more neurotic the first time around?
No, actually, the first time around, I don't feel like I had to support you.
It was normal, right? Like, it was normal. So fucking normal.
And then you went through the whole pregnancy, everything was normal until, I guess, it wasn't. But Even then, I don't know, it just felt normal.
So I'm not crazy. I literally think about that all the time. I'm like, am I just like a fucking psycho right now?
I think it you could almost like compare it to, you know, whenever you go from like being like dating, fiance, married.
Mm-hmm.
Like for us at least, like nothing changed. We were the same people through all three. We were just, you know, you just became married. And I feel like it was almost the same.
We're just
thing.
A loveless bunch.
I don't know. You know, you're just comfortable, and then like you're pregnant, and like that's fine. Like, yeah, you know, and everything was normal. So,
but this time, bum, bum, bum. So hang on before we get to that. So didn't really need a whole lot of support. It was fun to like shop for clothes, mm-hmm. and like, you know, do all like the first pregnancy stuff.
Yeah,
everything was normal. There wasn't a whole lot of support. I know that's going to be a lot different for a lot of different pregnancies, because say I was pregnant the first time around and, you know, Lilia got diagnosed with something, you know, mm-hmm. in the womb or in utero. And, you know, like we're scared. We don't know what's going to happen. The doctor says she might make it. She might not, you know, she might have to have surgery. I think that support for that is going to be different for everybody. We didn't have that situation, so no. Can't really.
And, you know, every pregnancy is also going to be different.
Right.
And you got to know that too. Like, it's just because like our pregnancy was normal throughout. In your significant other didn't need or doesn't need support, you know, your friend who is also pregnant, you know, they might be pregnant too. Well, I mean, maybe their significant other needs some support.
Right. Yeah, for sure. The, whenever Lilia was born,
mm-hmm.
I very clearly remember in labor and delivery room you sleeping like an angel. Gonna punch you in the fucking face.
Yeah.
And you almost vomiting,
mm-hmm.
and feeling like you're gonna pass the fuck out. So our situation is gonna be different again, because my daughter came 2 months early. Super fucking scary, because there's a shit ton of people in your labor and delivery room, and there's like fucking teams like waiting to snatch your baby awake because they're gonna need to like pump oxygen into it. Like, they kind of like walk you through like the beginning of like what's gonna happen, you know, not to be scared, but you're gonna be fucking scared because there's a shit ton of people in your room and it feels like you're gonna die or your baby's gonna die. Like, it's scary. So all of that I think probably helped with your nausea.
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely felt like I was going to throw up. I didn't know what was going to happen, and it doesn't matter any amount of explaining that the doctors do or can, you know, safety that they can guarantee for your wife and the baby or your significant other and the baby. It doesn't really give you the same amount of security as, like, having a full-term birth.
Right.
So, you know, you get all these people telling you that everything's going to be okay. They're going to take perfect care of your baby. But, you know, for us in particular, you know, she came out and she was crying, which was great.
Right.
For her being 2 months early. But then they take her over there and they're, you know, she's at 70% oxygen. They're trying to get her, you know, breathing. And they're talking about having to intubate. And, you know, as soon as she saw that tube, she was like, nah, I'm okay, I'll breathe,
mm-hmm.
you know. And she was good from then on. Even in the NICU, she did, I mean,
yeah, she was way a better rock
than,
star.
Yeah, way better than anybody else could have imagined at the time. And especially compared to some of those other babies in the NICU, I can't imagine what those dads and moms go through. Like, it's definitely rough to see some of them and, you know, so...
Yeah, I feel like the NICU experience wasn't as scary. Like,
no.
Whenever I, like, went into labor, that was definitely, like, my worry. I remember, so I went into labor at O'Charley's, you guys. Classic fucking story of having your water break in a public location. And so I remember sitting on the toilet at O'Charley's and, like, saying, because my mom was with us, I was like, it's too soon. Like, it's way too early. Like, I don't understand what's happening. But, like, I didn't think about the Nikki shit and, like, how scary all that stuff was. So, like, none of that was a thought in our heads until, like, it kind of happened.
Yeah.
So, again, like, there wasn't a whole lot of, like, support needed until the Nikki happened. So, our Nikki experience, like we said, like, wasn't too bad. There was a little bit of, like, a bumpy road where my daughter had really bad jaundice. She had like really bad jaundice, and her bilirubin, isn't that what it is? Bilirubin levels were really shitty. And so they were talking about having to do like
blood transfusions
and all kinds of stuff. And like they would like take her blood like in front of you sometimes, and just like, it's just shit that you don't want to see happen to like a little baby. So like all that scary shit was happening.
And I mean, she still has scars on her feet.
Yeah. To this day. Yeah. She still has scars from her NICU stay. So all this stuff is happening, and, you know, we have to leave the hospital without our child. So that, for me as a mom,
mm-hmm.
was gut-wrenching, to say the least.
I don't know. For me, it was almost worse to have to go back every time and not be able to leave with her. Like, you go back to visit and to check up and to get updates and all this stuff, but you still don't get to leave with her. Like, you know, you still have to keep going back to make sure she's okay. And, you know, you think sometimes when you're leaving, is something drastic going to happen? This is going to be the last time that I saw her. And, you know, maybe I don't ever get to come back here again because there's, you know, something drastic happened or whatever. And
every time the fucking phone rang. So you guys, they would call and like give updates and stuff. But whenever I say, so Erlinger, if you fucking listen to this, maybe don't call a mom at 2 a.m. to give the latest update from the doctor when they're just like, yeah, everything's good. The doctor just came. We just wanted to call and update you. Don't fucking ring me at 2 a.m. because I think my child is dead.
Yeah.
There was nothing scarier, because it was only some nurses that would do that. There was nothing scarier than getting that like really fucking late call. So kind of jumping now, babies in the NICU.
Mm-hmm.
Your wife has turned into a complete fucking manic psycho. It was really hard for me to come home without my child, but then it was really fucking hard to stare at the empty crib next to me and like just like be in our fucking home. And I was constantly pumping. I would go and visit her like 2 or 3 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
I was constantly at the hospital while Wes was having to go back to work. It's a battle that I feel like I did alone, because you kind of have to do it alone.
Yeah.
So what did you feel like was happening as you watched your wife become this monster?
Well, I mean, I don't know. For my sake, I just had to keep telling myself that, like, it's to be expected. You should feel a level of stress, especially that, you know, your husband or significant other is just not going to understand. You know, it's a lot of stress to keep up pumping, and in this case, having to go and, you know, see your baby in a plexiglass box with all kinds of wires and diodes and whatever else hooked up to them.
The fucking IV in the head.
Yeah, the IV in the head, God. The IV in the feet sometimes, and, you know, it's to be expected that you just get a little bit stressed out from that. If you weren't, I'd be more concerned about that. So, you know, if you're out there and you're kind of dealing with that level of like stress that your significant other is going through, you just have to keep reminding yourself that like both of you are going through this, and at some point like you're going to come to a general understanding of each other of like, you know, how this is going to be while you're going through it. And you just have to try and do what you can, cause you can't, you can't take their place or anything like that. So you just have to do what you can.
Right. That's the hardest fucking part, especially with breastfeeding and pumping and those like really tired beginning moments, is there's like only so much you can do. And that, okay. And for guys listening, that will make your wife or partner even fucking angrier.
Yeah.
We're the one with the tits, okay? And like, it's nobody's fault, but it's gonna piss me off that I'm the one who has to do everything.
Yeah.
No matter the situation, I'm still gonna be fucking mad. So just know that.
And I mean, when you think about like specifically with like the NICU and stuff like that, there is really nothing you can do,
mm-hmm.
except for go there, be with your significant other through the whole process, and just talk it out. I mean, that's probably the biggest thing. You need to communicate, and you need to be able to talk it out. You need to be able to talk about very hard things. And if you can't get to that milestone, it's going to be extremely difficult, extremely difficult to make it through the whole thing, you know, unscathed, if you will, like without marital troubles.
And not just NICU stay either. That's like just beginning baby phase in general. Because the baby phase, when you bring that newborn home for the first time, that's the real fucking battle. Yeah. You know, people talk about, you know, marriage woes and, you know, things that'll test your marriage. Bring home a new fucking baby. That'll test you.
I mean, I don't know about full-term birth because, I mean, we didn't have one. Hopefully we do for this one. But
knock on wood.
I don't know about full-term birth, but, like, with the NICU, I think maybe we changed Lilia's diaper, her little preemie diaper, maybe a handful of times. You probably changed it more.
I changed it a lot,
You know, every day. And bathed her couple times.
Yeah, I think I literally bathed her like twice.
But then they send
in a bucket.
But then they send you home, and you're just expected to already know all that stuff because it's been a month or, you know, however long you've been in the NICU. They just send you home.
Remember whenever the first time we went in there? Yeah. Oh my god, I just remember this. The first time we ever went in there, and they were gonna let us like handle her, and the woman was like, the nurse is like, go ahead and change your diaper, and then just like fucking left.
Yep.
She's in a goddamn box, like a fucking box. And we don't know where the diapers are. She didn't even give us anything. Yeah. And she's like, go ahead and change your diaper. We've never changed a diaper in our fucking lives. I've never even held a baby. My daughter's inside of a box with like wires. How am I supposed to get around the wires to change your diaper? What if I break her legs when I go to pick her up? Like, that shit's scary.
Yeah. And like I said, I don't know about full-term birth. I don't know if they give you some more training, or maybe we should have done some more like hands-on stuff beforehand. But, you know, at that point, it's a little bit too late. Like, we're already far gone.
To be fair, if we had a full-term baby, changing the diaper wouldn't have been that big of a fucking deal. We could have figured the shit out, wouldn't have to ask anybody.
Probably would have been
but if you're
of
a fucking NICU nurse, okay, and there's some new goddamn fucking parents, and this baby is 3 pounds and inside of a box with wires and shit, don't even give him a diaper, first of all. And you just say, go ahead and change your diaper, and you leave, fuck you. That's not fair.
Yeah.
We don't know what the fuck we're doing. How are we supposed to get in there? Are we supposed to wear gloves? What if we knock a wire off? Like, that shit's so scary.
And like, I don't know about you guys, but I have trouble changing the diaper from the side. And in the NICU box, if you ever go to a NICU, you know, God forbid any of you go to a NICU, if you ever do though, the only way to change the diaper in one of those boxes is from the side. And you know, you couple that with, I don't even know what the hell I'm doing in here. I had the hardest time changing her diaper in the NICU.
Yeah.
It was fine when she was home. I don't feel like I had that much trouble when she's home.
Flop them around.
You know, she was, you know, I still feel like she was fragile because she was so small, but at the same time, it was just way easier.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, she was, once she came out of the box and she was in like the little bassinet thing, it wasn't so scary.
No, so.
But yeah, the NICU stay, I think, was a little bit different. I think probably my battles with her and the NICU are probably equivalent to what a lot of moms might feel with like a new baby in the home, just like the constant stress and worry, because my crippling fear with losing my daughter in the NICU and getting those fucking phone calls all the time is probably the same fear that you feel and that I also felt when she came home, of just being able to fall asleep. Like, I literally asked you the first night we had her home. I was like, how the fuck am I supposed to sleep? Mm-hmm. How do I close my eyes and, like, go to sleep? Like I feel like I had to watch her breathe. I was so scared. Although I kind of had reason to be scared, because there were times that, like, I would wake up sometimes and she would be blue from where, I guess, maybe, like, in the way, like, her bassinet was at an angle because she had, what is it? Acid reflux.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Acid reflux. Fuck, I couldn't think of the word. And so, I don't know, maybe sometimes she would just kind of like, her chin would like tuck in her chest. I don't know, but it was fucking scary. They're just sleeping with bullshit. So you've got a super tired wife who, pumping, I was exclusively pumping. So you guys, every 2 hours, you got to feed this baby, right? So I would exclusively pump. So I would wake up and I would pump, and then I was only making enough to feed her, so I didn't have storage or anything. So I would, like, pump, make the bottle, feed her, and then, or There was sometimes storage.
Yeah, we had a storage for a little bit, and then as time progressed, it kind of
Stress got to me more and more.
Yeah, the storage that we had and the way that she was starting to consume.
Yeah, it was dwindling quick.
She started to pick up on consuming very quickly and a lot. And you couldn't keep up.
But yeah. And so like I would feed her and then pump, or sometimes I would pump and then feed her. Either way.
Yeah.
And then break the pump apart, clean it, set it out to dry. By the time like you're done, you don't have any fucking time to sleep because you're about to do it all over again. So I had like very little sleep. And that's one of those things again that like you couldn't help me with.
Yeah.
Like how are you can't milk your own titties.
Yeah. I mean
what, I wish.
What did I do? Like I sometimes if we had enough storage and like you didn't need to wake up on that particular cycle, I would feed her out of the bottle. But sometimes like all I can do is just take the parts from the machine and clean and sanitize that. But sometimes, I mean, eventually we just kind of came to an understanding where, you know, I'm going to wake up on every other one so that we could kind of block ourselves out a little bit more. But
that's also where my milk started dwindling, though, is that like I prioritized, like, you, because I was exclusively pumping, mm-hmm. it was a little bit harder for like the sleep schedule, like, you know, I had a little more time that I needed to take to do all that shit. It wasn't just like latch onto the breast, feed, and then go back to sleep. Like, there was a fucking, you know, there was a lot to do. So I would breaks that I would take where like you would take her sometimes, my tits would turn into rocks,
right?
Because they were so fucking full and it was so sore. Yes. I'd wake up in like puddles of fucking tit milk.
Yeah,
because, and I think that's, now that like I'm thinking about it, I think that's a lot of like the issue that we had. But anyway, so supporting me during like the fucking crazy times, I think that the biggest things that got me through it was just like your willingness to kind of do whatever. Like, I have pictures, you guys, I would take pictures of him because I was just so fucking love drunk. I would take pictures of him just like doing mundane things. Like, I have a picture of him in the bathroom cleaning out my pump parts. I have a picture of him like cooking dinner, like in that first apartment that we had where we brought like our daughter home. I have a picture of him sitting in a rolling chair pushing the vacuum around because he was a lazy piece of shit and he didn't want to vacuum up the cat litter.
But
yeah. Just like, it's just like the little things that you guys can do to help, because that stuff, even though like at the time, like I was super fucking pissed all the time, and you probably felt like it didn't make a difference. It did. Like, it did.
I mean, yeah, it, you know, you're going to feel, how do I say this? You're going to feel a certain type of way that is, you just have to remember that it's going to pass eventually.
A certain type of way.
Yeah.
Don't leave your wife. Don't leave me.
You're gonna feel frustrated. You're gonna feel like the stuff that you're doing, maybe, I don't know, I wouldn't say isn't appreciated, but isn't
appreciated.
I mean, yeah, maybe it isn't appreciated, but eventually it does pass, especially after you get through like the first, I would say the first month after the baby's home, but probably 2 months. And again, that's going to be different for everybody, but for us, it was about 2 months in, and you just kind of realize that, like, everything's okay, and especially once you have a routine settled.
Right,
once
that's the big thing.
Once we got a routine settled, I don't know, everything from there until the next milestone, where, you know, she was starting to crawl around, and, you know, it's weird as a dad, I don't know about you, but, like, as a dad, going through transitions in like these milestones, like when she starts crawling around, when she started like getting up onto her knees, or like just sitting around, and then like when she started walking, those big transitions, for me personally, like, they're huge changes, especially for the baby. You know, when they start walking around, you get kind of frustrated because they can do new things, and you're like, oh, I don't want them to do that. And then you're like, oh, but they need to do that. They need to learn. And you forget about that too. So,
right.
You know, I don't know. That was kind of a tangent. But anyway, you know.
I mean, yeah, no, that's true. 100% true. So now we have another psycho in the house. She's two. And we actually, so we usually record on Saturdays, you guys, and it's Sunday at like fucking 11 o'clock at night right now. We're recording because we've had a time with our little toddler, and tonight she was a pain in the ass to get to bed. She's got a lot of personality.
Mm-hmm.
So now with a toddler, I don't feel like I need as much support. I think a lot of my issues come from being locked in this fucking house. I don't feel like it's anything to do so much with motherhood as it is to be with stay-at-home motherhood.
I mean, yeah.
Like, I'm not designed for it. A lot of women who, like, might listen to this podcast are like, oh, I live for this stay-at-home mom life. I love being with my kids. You know, I love my daughter, but, like, I need people. Like, I cannot. It makes me, I'm super jealous. It makes me really upset that, like, my husband, who doesn't appreciate it because he hates people, my husband gets to go out and, like, he gets to go to work and, like, go to the office and all this stuff. And, like, I don't have a job right now, one, because we just moved, but also because, you know, I took the time to get my master's, you know, finish all this stuff that I wanted to get done, which is, you know, my own thing, but I am stuck in this fucking house, and it turns me again into a psychopath. So you have a stay-at-home mom who is losing her mind because she's trapped in the house, and it's a 24/7 job. Like, you don't get a fucking break.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like, again, I guess it's where, like, the you don't feel appreciated thing probably comes into play again, but do you feel like there's any type of support that you do give me, or that you feel like you should give me? Although I don't feel like you do, like, a bad job or anything.
I don't know. For me, I feel like it's kind of the other way around now. I need the support because, like, she's doing stuff that you guys do all day. You guys are here and you have a relationship that, you know, she's doing things, but I see them and I'm like, oh man, I don't feel like she should be doing that or something like that. Like, I don't know. You know, especially with, like, we have a neighbor that I guess doesn't like how loud a 2-year-old is.
Yeah. Like, we live on a third fucking floor.
So
get over it.
So, like, for me, who is a non-confrontational person who hates people, her making this noise is just inviting trouble in my eyes. In your eyes, she's just, like, playing, and she should be allowed to play. I agree. But at the same time, being the non-confrontational person that I am, I need the support to be like, no, she needs to just play.
Yeah, no. You know, I invite a bitch to come to my fucking door.
Yeah.
Knock on my door and tell me my daughter can't play in her own fucking house. I fucking pay to live here. Please, come knock on my door.
So, I mean, on that front, you know, I feel like I almost need the support more now. Just because, like, I am who I am, and I'm just a little bit, I'm a little bit non-confrontational, a little bit. And, you know, sometimes I feel like I do overdo it with Lilia. And, you know, just gotta get better at that. But when you call me out on that, it helps, even though at the time maybe I'm like, you know, why is she calling me out on this? Like, I'm just doing my job as, like, a dad.
Yeah.
But sometimes, you know, if you're out there, you're a partner to somebody and they're in a similar situation, or maybe you just get called out on shit, like, just, you know, take it in stride, because it's helping. Some, you got to pick your battles here. Like, this isn't really a battle that you really need to fight, because your son, daughter, whatever, needs to be able to play and make messes, and
be a fucking,
it doesn't
child.
Matter how OCD you are, how perfectionist you are, how non-confrontational you are, letting them do that is super helpful for their development, and they just need to be allowed to do that. Now, as far as supporting somebody, like, I mean, I don't feel like the greatest cook, but you gotta cook. Like, get in the kitchen.
Oh, God, yes.
Get in the kitchen, man. Fuck. Like, it's not hard. And I'll just say it right now, fuck toxic masculinity. Yeah. Get in there and do the fucking dishes. Like, it's not hard.
Yeah.
If you need help, like, figuring out how to, like, sort some fucking dishes, ask your significant other if they can, like, show you how they would sort the dishes. And then, like, just remember that and just do it every time.
My husband is proof, you guys. My husband is proof that it's not a big deal to cook. So whenever he and I first, like, got together, I think he could make, like, Swiss steak, which is, like, this meal that he makes. It's, like, a one-pot thing. It's super fucking good. But I think that's, like, literally, like, the only thing that you could really cook. Like, you knew. Not looking at a recipe. Yeah. Granted, anybody can read a recipe. I say that. But if you can't read a recipe, you know, I'm fucking sorry. Well, but you're not smart.
I mean, but that's that's the point, though. Anybody can read a recipe. So if you're out there and you're like, oh, man, I don't really know how to cook, then read a recipe. There's no shame in, like, reading a recipe.
Right, but now, like, you don't even have to do that. Well, you guys, my fucking husband can turn out a spaghetti sauce that will make your panties fucking moist. This spaghetti sauce is so stupid good. And, like, it's different every time. But, like, it's just he can cook now, and, like, it's not a big deal.
And if Babish is out there, it's all thanks to him, by the way.
Babish is our juice. But yeah, like, it just took time. I mean, because, like I said, I have pictures of him, you know, cooking in the kitchen back whenever we first brought our daughter home. Like, that's where it started. He didn't really ever have to cook before, but that's because I liked to do it. It's kind of like my thing. I really like to cook. But whenever he comes home and I've had my daughter all day, it's kind of fucked up. But, like, I'm ready for a break. But it's fucked up because he's also worked all day and he's probably ready for a break. So it's, like, give and take. Like, where do you...
No, I think it's important to be able to say, I need a break. Just as it's important to say, like, if you are having just a bad day and you're coming at me with, like, just, you know, issues that you've had all day, or, like, you're trying to vent with me. I think that, you know, I heard this a while ago, but I think it's important for you to be able to say, look, I know that you're trying to vent with me. I can't really take that right now. Like, I'm going to take it as, you're going to take it too personally or something like that. And you guys got to realize that, like, none of this is probably ever personal, unless it is. You know, none of it's probably personal, but if your significant other is venting with you, just to have the ability to say, look, I know you need to vent. I can't take that right now. And, you know, be okay until maybe the next day.
Right.
And then just vent then.
But, like, if you've had a really overwhelming day.
Yeah. If you've had a really overwhelming day at work, just say, look, I know you need to vent, but, like, I can't take it.
And y'all bitches don't get mad at that shit. Like, although I don't think I ever do I?
Well, that's because I never say it.
Be honest.
Because I haven't had to say that. But, you know, there probably is going to come a day where I'm gonna be like, look, I really can't take any venting right now. I've had a really bad day, and it's just, you know, I've already got a lot going on.
I don't really feel like I vent, though, a whole lot until, okay, but that's kind of a problem. I don't feel like I vent until, like, I'm fucking boiling over.
Mm-hmm.
I don't say anything until, like, my fucking top is flipped.
Yeah, and, you know, again, partners, significant others, if you're out there, if you need to vent, then you need to vent. But just make sure it's going both ways, or at least, you know, that your partner is able to help you through that, is in a mindset that's going to be helpful to you.
I don't really feel like you vent with me, though.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, I don't really feel the need to vent. Like, my job isn't...
Is it because I'm a perfect wife?
Yeah, I mean,
ew.
For the most part, I don't really feel the need to vent. Anything that happens, like, if you get mad at me or something, just, we handle it on the spot. But if you're not that type of couple, if you're not that type of person to do that kind of thing, and you need the ability to vent, then you need the ability to vent, and your partner needs to be there and be reciprocal with that. And if they're not in the mind state to do that, then it's just going to be kind of toxic for both of you. So you have to kind of choose your moments here.
Sometimes I feel like because you don't vent to me, and like you might just be like a really nice person. I don't know. It makes me mad how perfect you are. But, like, you don't say anything about me ever.
I mean,
there's nothing that I do to piss you off. Like, no. You don't get mad at me, like, literally fucking ever. Yeah. I could probably spit in your mouth and you'd be like, thank you. But, no, like, I don't, and I worry that maybe, like, it's bottling up inside, and one day you're just gonna snap and kill us all.
I mean, no. I don't know. I just, again, it's probably me being non-confrontational, but at the end of the day, it doesn't really bother me that much. I can, not justify, that's not the word I want to use, but kind of let it just roll off. It's not that big of a deal if you're coming at me with, like...
Well, I guess usually the things I get mad at are, like...
Legitimate.
Well, no, I wasn't going to say legitimate, but they're kind of stupid. Like, I think I was talking about this last time where, like, I'll fucking... Oh, God, I'm going to say something that's pissing me off right now. Like, the rocking chair in the fucking living room that I've asked you to throw away. Like, if I went out there and stubbed my toe on it, I wouldn't be angry that I stubbed my toe. I would immediately be mad that you didn't take it out in the trash. No. Like, that's the kind of shit that happens. Like, something will happen that had nothing related to it, but then I'll immediately get mad at Wes because somehow it was his fault.
Well, and I mean, here's another thing. You're going to, as you progress through fatherhood, you will realize that you are becoming more and more like your father, probably, or your mom, even. Like, and you know, I know my mom listens to this podcast too, so I got to be careful about what I say here. But, you know, you become more and more like your parents, or parent, you know. But in that, like my dad was talking to me the other day, there's some stuff that he just doesn't notice.
Right.
And because he doesn't notice it, he doesn't even know that he's supposed to do things. I don't notice the chair out there because, I mean, honestly, it's not in my way ever. And I don't notice the chair out there sometimes. I know it needs to go out. I've been told probably 5 times that it needs to go in the trash. And, you know, I need to do it. It's just like, you know, you don't realize that it's there. There's been other times, too, where there's been, like, wrappers or something from, let's say, a mac and cheese or something like that I made for Lilia that I just kind of left on the counter after we were done making it. And just didn't throw it away.
Okay.
And, you know, I just... It's little things like that you miss.
Right.
So.
But, to be fair, you guys... And I'm sure a lot of girls will hear me and be like, yeah, girl, you're a fucking psycho, so am I. I make messes, too. Okay? But I think the reason why it's upsetting... I was thinking about this the other day, actually. And I didn't even... I haven't mentioned it to you. I think the reason why it's so upsetting... So, like, you leave shit around and, like, I pick it up. Mm-hmm. And you're like, I was going to get it. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm just going to get it now. But like, I'm mad that I'm having to do it. I will make messes and I clean up after myself on my own time. And like, it's not a big deal to me because like, I'm here all day. Like, it's not a big fucking deal. Mm-hmm. But then you come home and you make messes and I'm having to clean up after you because I want it done right now.
Yeah.
Like, it's like you have made a mess and you're going to clean it up on your own time, but not on my time. So it makes me mad. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah. And I mean, and it goes both
again,
ways.
A fucking psycho.
I think it goes both ways, too. I mean, I'll tell on you a little bit here. You leave paper towels all over the place.
Oh, my God.
You've even admitted to it.
I know. I'm a fucking paper towel whore.
Like, there's paper towels all over the place, and I'm like...
I think I'm going to use them again, so I just leave them on the counter.
And usually, like, if I'm doing dishes or something, I'll just pick them up then. Right. Like, it's not a big deal, and it doesn't... For me, like, that might be something that you vent to me, but for me, it's just like, oh, I'm already in here. I'll just pick it up. You know, it's not a big deal. I mean, and, you know, I can see my desk from here. I'm looking at a cup. Like, I need to throw that away. You know, there's stuff that needs to be done, and sometimes I just overlook it. And
right.
It's because I sit at my desk. When I get home from sitting at a desk all day doing, you know, development work on whatever app, I come home and I sit down. And I pretend to do development work. In reality, I just play video games.
So, that's true. We do. We do that. So, our marriage and toddler life, I feel like, has developed significantly in just communication. And I think that it has been our success.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that... I think that that's probably the biggest support is just... communicate and like be open, because as much as like it's fucking annoying to hear the things that like piss somebody off about you, I think it's important to hear it if you want shit to work, especially once you have a child, because you don't want to be frustrated at each other. Your kids are going to feel that tension. You're probably going to take all that shit out on your kids, especially, you know, like if they do something little, you're going to snap. I have those moments where I'm just like, Lilia, please sit the fuck down for 2 seconds before mommy loses her marbles.
I mean, I do too.
Right.
Like, she doesn't, I mean, our daughter really just does not know how to not move. So it can be a little trying.
So now moving on with our last little bit here with current pregnancy. So your wife is off her medication. Mm-hmm. Her anxiety is manageable throughout the day because I'm busy. Like, it's not a big deal. Like, I honest to God don't notice it. But the second my head hits the pillow, I'm like a fucking manic. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sleeping. Like, it's awful. And my worries are pretty intense with this pregnancy and, like, things that, like, I feel like kind of need to happen. And I just want to get to the doctor and, like, you know, everything be A-okay. You know, I have a lot of questions that I want to talk to them about. But, like, you can't fast forward time and, like, rush shit. Mm-hmm. So all I have to do is, like, think about it. And I have no idea how you're going to help me through this one.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I don't know what, like, how to. Because we didn't have these issues the first time, like we were saying in the beginning. So, like, I don't know what to do necessarily. But yeah, I just gotta take it in stride. That's all I can do. You gotta like take each day.
Do you feel like you worry about the same things I worry about? Or do you feel like whenever I tell you my worries, you're just like, God, what the fuck?
Well, no. I think the worries are fine. It's just, we haven't been to the doctor yet. So,
right.
You know, some of the stuff that we worry or that you worry about aren't going to be like huge issues for me until we go to the doctor. And maybe the doctor says, oh no, you should probably be worried about that.
Our doctor is making us wait a little bit longer than like the usual for us to come in. So it's kind of been a little bit frustrating, I guess, because I've usually like last time, like we'd already been to the doctor. We'd already heard the baby's heartbeat. Like everything was good. But now we're just kind of like, just like waiting around. Yeah. We have to wait till like the middle of August to go.
Yeah, so I mean there's not much I can do except for just be around.
And, oh god, and then we've got the COVID shit now in my fucking mind. Yeah. Every time we go out, like I'm masked up, looking like I'm about to rob the place. Like I can't like take you to doctor's appointments, like it has to be just me. Like
yeah, and I mean it's not as if like you know, another thing, like, normally I would say, like, oh, you could go out there and, like, get the groceries and do all this stuff. But, like, that doesn't make a difference in a COVID world where you could bring COVID home with you. You know what I'm saying? And you're worried about that. I'm worried about that.
I worry about it with you going to work.
Yeah.
I wish you could work from home.
Yeah.
With me being pregnant.
You know, and by the way, take all the stuff we said before in context of I used to work from home. So there's a little bit more context there. I used to work from home, so it was easier for us to kind of split shift some of this stuff than it might be for some of you guys out there. But yeah, in a COVID world, like there's a lot more worries than just what can happen and has happened with other people in their pregnancy. So you can only take so many precautions, I guess. But
are you nervous this time around?
Not nervous. I don't think nervous is the word. Just cautious.
What did you think whenever I was like, yeah, you knocked me up?
I mean, to be honest, it was just like, oh, okay. You know, we're gonna do this again. You know, it's not as if we hadn't been trying or anything. So it's like, okay, we're just going to have baby number two. This time around, it feels more like, oh, I've done this before. Like, to a point, I'm going to kind of dig myself into a bad spot here probably whenever this baby is born because I think the most dangerous thought you can have is probably, oh, I've got this, especially as a first-time dad. if you're out there and you're like about to be a first-time father, partner, whoever, and your thoughts are, no, I've got this, I'm good with kids,
you don't,
you really don't.
You don't got it.
You don't know. I don't know how to put this, you know, any more nicely, but you're not prepared for that. And I mean that in the most like good way possible. You're not prepared for that, and that's okay. And the sooner that you realize that you're not prepared for that, the better off you are, because you can start looking to other people for help, other dads in your area, you know, or whatever, or just friends that have kids. And I don't care if you're great with kids. I don't think that matters. I'm terrible with kids. I don't like kids. I love my own kid. But I don't care if you are great with kids. That might not matter. That might not make a difference.
Yeah.
It might, but it probably won't. I'm going to be honest. It's one thing to have to deal with a kid, you know, or a baby for that matter, for like, I don't know, maybe 30 minutes, an hour, 2 hours, 4 hours, compared to
that 20, life shit.
24/7, 365. Having to deal with, you know, a baby that you can't just get rid of. Like, it's not going away.
I mean...
Like, it's not going away.
You could, though.
You know, you can dip out and, you know...
But don't. Please don't, you guys.
You could dip out and be another statistic, but, like, for what it's worth, don't do that.
Yeah, be a good fucking parent.
Like, there's a severe lack of good fathers in the world, and there's a severe overabundance of toxic masculinity. That I can't ascribe to. So, like, if you're out there and you're, like, on the fence, like, maybe I should just go. Like, don't be another statistic. Make it work. Don't make it work for the kids, but make it work for yourself.
Unless it's some, like, psycho bitch who, like, hits you, or she's just, like, genuinely awful, then, you know, make it work for the kid. Don't make it work with the relationship. Yeah. You know, fuck that bitch, but, you know, take care of your kids.
Yeah. You know, figure out what is the best path to make sure that your kid has a healthy relationship. If you're mad at your significant other because they kind of got a little pissy with you, work that shit out. If you're mad at your significant other because they're beating the shit out of you, get out of there.
Right.
And make sure you do the same for the kids. Don't leave the kids behind.
No.
You know, like, don't, you know, fight for them. Show them that you are, you know, a caring person, whether you're the mother or the father. It doesn't really matter in this situation. Just, you know, make sure that you take care of the kids.
Yeah, stand up for your fucking kids.
Yeah.
Don't just let shit happen. But yeah, for sure. I think that it'll be a fun journey with baby number two, especially with your wife having been on medicine now and, like, knowing the difference. And then, like, now I can, like, feel... I can feel myself at night. You guys, it's only at night, okay? Just... so you know, like, I'm not neurotic any other time, just at nighttime. I've got, like, a good case of the sundowners, so I feel like it'll be an interesting journey for us to figure out what'll happen.
Yeah,
and hopefully we can keep you guys posted as, like, we learn new things. And granted, we are not soothsayers. We are damn near perfect, though. Yeah, our relationship, I will toot my own horn on that, I feel like is top fucking notch. It's unbelievable to me sometimes that I get to be in this marriage and, like, have a relationship like we do. Like, what kind of couples do we know of that could sit here and have this kind of conversation and, like, be okay and, like, admit faults and, like,
not beat each other's throats?
You don't know what's gonna happen when we get off this podcast, but I feel like just, like, our willingness to communicate and, like, make sure that we get through the shit that we always want to get through because we want to stay together.
Yeah.
I think that's an important thing to remember when you're bringing kids into your relationship, whether you're married or not, it doesn't matter, but is to always remember that you want to be with this person. Like, when you take a step back and you look at your marriage or whatever, and you have kids involved, and you're like, man, I really fucking hate this bitch, but, you know, I've got my kids, so I'm going to stay. Don't fucking stay. There's a problem there. Like, you need to, when you look at your relationship, are you reevaluating? You're just staring off into the distance. Are you like, oh, shit.
So here's the thing. We record on Audacity, and it has this little bar graph that goes across and straight up. It's like watching fire. I don't know. You guys ever watch just, like, stare at fire? Because it's like...
Sure. Sure it is. I feel like now he's gonna leave me, but anyway, so the point that I'm making is that you need to fight through your shit and, like, talk about it and have that open communication to stay a healthy relationship so that you can have a healthy family to raise healthy, happy kids.
Yeah. No.
You don't want to raise some fuckers like me. Like, you don't want your kids to turn out like me. So raise them in a healthy, happy relationship. So I don't think that I ever introduced you.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe.
My husband's name is Wes. I'm pretty sure I've talked about it before on other podcasts. But Wes, I do want to thank you for coming on and talking and airing out our laundry onto this podcast for an hour.
Yeah.
So if you guys have any questions or any comments or anything that you want to address, feel free to reach out to us on our Facebook page. It is facebook.com/thegoodmom. It might be the Good Mom Podcast, to be honest with you. I don't know. Just type both in, you'll find us. If you just like go in the search bar and type in the Good Mom, you'll find us. I'm there. You can reach us there. Again, thank you guys so much. We will see you next episode.
Thank you so much for listening to the Good Mom Podcast. Don't forget to hit the follow button on Spotify or iTunes or whatever listening platform you are using. That way you don't miss a single episode released every Monday.